Stay tuned for Time to Talk with host Jennifer Graziano of Zion Memorial Chapel and Cox and Graziano Funeral Homes. Jennifer is here to discuss a sensitive subject we all need to talk and think about. Here now is Jennifer Graziano and Time to Talk.
Good afternoon, Westchester. It's 12 noon on Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk with me, Jen Graziano. I am a licensed funeral director who oversees my family's funeral homes, Cox and Graziano of both Mamaroneck and Greenwich, and the Zion Memorial Chapel of Westchester. Every week I come to you discussing sensitive topics, important matters that all of us need to pause and reflect upon at some point, and through this show I hope to provide a platform to do so. I am joined today by a recurring guest on the show, our Medicaid elder law expert, self-proclaimed. However, he's been wonderful for a lot of listeners, Sal DiCostanzo. Welcome.
Welcome, Jen.
You were with the firm Maker, Fregale, and DiCostanzo with offices in both Lower Westchester and Northern Westchester, Ryan, Yorktown to be exact.
That's right.
So wherever you are in the county, Sal can help you. Welcome back, Sal.
Thank you, Jen. Good to be here.
Sal, the reason I continue to ask you back is because the subject of planning for Medicaid comes up in very frequently in my line of work, as it does yours, I'm sure. But I want to just begin the show with the premise of an elder law attorney, because a lot of times when people are in nursing home situations, they're going to be dealing with social workers. And although we have a great deal of respect for social workers, there's a niche to what you do that sets you apart from them and also from your field of attorneys at large as well. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, that's true. I mean, one of the things that we start off with when we build our client relationships is we try to explain to individuals just exactly what an elder law attorney does. And I like to tell people that an elder law attorney is really a conglomerate of practice areas. I happen to be an accountant as well as an attorney. And so you have a little bit of a tax background that's very important in the practice of elder law. You're doing trust and estates. You're drafting wills. You're drafting trust, different types of trust, revocable and irrevocable trust, with an eye on asset protection, right? So one of the things that we're trying to do for people is protect their assets. And we do a lot of Medicaid planning. We get people in nursing homes. We get people to stay at home with caregivers. So it's a little bit of everything. And at times, we're even acting as social workers. Sometimes we're acting as funeral directors. You have to be able to tap into all those different areas of practice, if you would, and all those different disciplines to be able to be well-rounded enough to help the individuals that come into your door. You got to remember, people come into us when they're in very stressful situations.
I was going to say, it's going to be an emotionally charged visit when people come to you. Because, you know, even in the best case scenario, when someone's healthy and they're not at the point where they're in need of the additional care, you're talking about a transfer of assets. You're talking about, you know, wealth and succession and generational planning.
That's right.
So obviously you have in the back of your mind, you know, there's as great as it is to know you're passing down wealth to your family, there's something about it where it calls to mind your own mortality and people,
yeah,
I'm sure, are
and there's
reluctant.
So much more to it than that. I was on the phone with a family this week, and I'm not even really putting pen to paper just yet.
You know,
the value that I'm bringing to the table, and this goes into why you want to work with an elder law attorney, is that I'm setting them up with other professionals in the area that is tangential to what they're coming to ask me for assistance with.
And there are many. So let's talk a bit about nursing home versus home care. It's the cost of care that is so exorbitant these days that people, you know, you've talked before, there's three ways that you can fund your long-term care insurance with lots of red tape. Oh, there's a fourth now. Okay. Maybe I didn't listen to you the first couple of times. But we have long-term care insurance. There's a lot of catch-alls to that, a lot of red tape, and it's quite costly. The premiums are
high.
You have Medicare, which is very limited in what it will cover and what it will fund. You have Medicaid, where you come in. And number four?
Pay for it yourself.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the
how obvious. Could you forget?
Exactly
what we're trying to avoid.
Exactly. So talk a bit about nursing home versus home care and the cost that come in and what your experience is dictating on that subject.
So, you know, we're always talking about how to plan in advance, right? And the brand of my practice is plan today for tomorrow. But what I thought we'd be able to speak a little bit more about today is just exactly what happens when you have not done any planning.
Absolutely.
And those are the phone calls that we get at the last minute in time when somebody says, my husband, had a stroke.
Right.
He's at the nursing home or he's in a hospital and they want to transfer him to a nursing home. and you find out that he's going to probably be there for quite some time.
Right.
And no planning has been done. And that's the frantic phone call that we receive. And the message I want to get out to the audience is that even if you haven't done your planning, there's always something that a competent elder law attorney can do to try to help. Even at the 11th hour, it may be that we have to go from A, to get from A to C, we've got to go around the horn.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be as direct as we would like, but there's always something to be done. So, for instance, we might get a phone call from a spouse that's saying that she's in a nursing home or her husband's in a nursing home, and they want her to start paying $12,000 to $15,000 a month.
Which is the average cost.
It's the average cost in the area.
Okay.
And, you know, it's rising every year.
Do you find home care to be significantly less than nursing care? Or nowadays, do you feel that it's going to be pretty much commensurate?
It depends on just the amount of hours that a person needs at home. You know, so that mm-hmm. could vary. See, when you're in a nursing home, you're in a nursing
you're
home.
You're 24 hours.
That's it. You're paying $12,000 to $15,000 a month.
Right.
But in a home care scenario, it could be anywhere from 4 hours a day to...
Right,
to,
daycare versus evening
that's
care.
That's right, to a okay. live-in. So it could get really expensive. But... You know, in a nursing home scenario, and even quite frankly in a home care scenario, there's always an opportunity to try to save some assets. So what we don't want to see are those individuals who, out of panic, out of fear, listening to the advice of non-elder law attorneys,
right?
Or non-attorneys,
right?
Or the nursing homes saying, "Pay us," and you find people exhausting their resources, and in some cases leaving themselves destitute. Just to pay for a nursing home for a loved one.
And you worked all your life. I mean, people worked all their life for the assets that they've accumulated.
And there's different ways that we can help somebody even at the last moment in time. There's things called spousal refusal when there's a spouse in the community.
Let's talk about that. What is spousal refusal?
Well, when there's a spouse in the community, a well spouse, we can move the assets of the ill spouse to the well spouse and do certain things, certain planning techniques that will cause Medicaid not to look at those assets. It's a very easy planning technique from an elder law attorney's perspective, but it's riddled with traps.
Right.
And so everybody out there who has a little bit of knowledge tries to give out this advice, but there are repercussions if you miss the ball.
I would imagine, you know, dotting your I's and crossing your T's are so important. And if anyone is just listening to us, I'm joined by Sal DiCostanzo. He's an elder care attorney with the firm Maker Fregale and DiCostanzo, offices in both Rye and Yorktown. We're discussing planning, asset protection, and the fact that it's never too late to start thinking about these matters, protecting what you've worked your lifetime to accumulate, and also how to fund long-term care. So spousal refusal, getting back to what you were saying, Sal, you take a well spouse and you are transferring assets from the ill spouse
That's right.
into the well spouse.
That's right. Okay. And sometimes that has to be done through a guardianship proceeding
mm-hmm.
Because if there was no planning in advance, such as a power of attorney. And when I mention a power of attorney, we've done this before, Jen, and on several occasions, you know, you can't just have a boilerplate power of attorney.
Right.
You can't just go off the internet and print out. You
go
can't
to Staples and pick up the form.
You can't do that. You can't go to your friend who represented you when you did your real estate purchase. it's so important, and I can't impress upon the audience enough that it's so worth it to just spend a few extra dollars with an elder law attorney and get the right power of attorney drafted. And by the way, how do you know if you're working with an elder law attorney? Because there are a lot of attorneys out there that will say, "Sure, I can help you. You know, I can do this." Now, how do you know if that person really can do what they
are
say
you asking
they can
me
do?
Personally?
No,
do you have
I'm
like
not
a special code
you.
Or a secret handshake when people come in?
If
how
I
do
blink
you know?
Twice.
How do you know?
It's incumbent upon the audience to do a little bit of research.
Okay.
Right? So when you go onto my website and you read about me, I may not be the best elder law attorney. I may not be the person that you want to work with for various reasons. Mm-hmm. But you know that I'm an elder law attorney after you read my biography and my history.
Okay.
Do that for whoever it is that you're contemplating working with. Just don't take somebody's advice. Don't take their word as gospel.
Right.
A lot of people come to me all the time and they say, "Well, but my friend told me to use this person." That's not good enough.
Right.
Do a little bit of research.
Line,
There's way too much on the line.
Point.
And so probably about 30% of my practice involves fixing other people's mistakes. And it always starts off with somebody saying, but I went to an attorney.
Yeah.
But it's not good enough to just go to an attorney. A general practitioner is not the person you want to speak to.
I think also, I mean, even from my perspective as a funeral director, the Medicaid laws are changing. They're ever evolving. I mean, across the state lines, we just went through some big changes in Connecticut. But even here, we hear about this look-back period. This comes up weekly, you know, often daily in my job. People are coming in to pre-plan. They're getting on Medicaid, and we're in the process of disposing of assets. And you always hear about this look-back period.
That's right.
That is something that, when is the time to start thinking about the look-back period? It's actually before you get sick.
Way before, but it's
one of the— Is it 5 years now?
It's 5 years. So the look-back period is one of the biggest misconceptions in the planning, in Medicaid planning.
Just for listeners who might not have heard the term, explain look-back period.
So when you apply for nursing home Medicaid,
okay,
not home care,
nursing
that's one
home
of the
Medicaid.
Biggest distinctions. Nursing home Medicaid will look back 5 years from the date that you entered the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll look back 5 years through your records, through all your financial records. And if they see that you moved money out of your name, they will then take the totality of those amounts
that you moved,
transfers,
mm-hmm,
and they will divide them by a regional rate, roughly $10,000. So, for instance, if I moved $100,000 over the last 5 years,
mm-hmm,
they're going to find that. They're going to take the $100,000 and they're going to divide it by $10,000. That equals 10. That means that you're ineligible for Medicaid for 10 months. And that's how people that have done no planning end up having problems with the nursing homes. Because you end up now in a nursing home and you can't pay your bill.
Right.
And you still need the care.
Right.
So the nursing homes it doesn't work out too well for them, but it also may not work out so well for the person that needs the care. But that's one of the biggest misconceptions. Now, there are exceptions to this look-back period.
Go ahead.
You could transfer assets between spouses.
Okay.
And there's no look-back period.
Okay.
You could transfer assets to a disabled person. You can transfer the homestead to a caretaker child. Right, these are all ways.
And what does Medicaid define? What do they define as a caretaker child?
Caretaker child is somebody that's been living with the person that needs, mm-hmm, institutional level of care,
okay,
for the 2 years prior to that.
So
person.
So there has to be a cohabitation.
There's a period of time, you know, that you've got. There's cohabitation, a period of time,
okay,
that you've got to meet that test. But there are all these different ways legally and in the statutes and the regulations that an elder attorney is mindful of, that we can get assets out of people's names without having to incur any kind of penalty. And there is no look-back period in home care. So people come to me all the time and they say, I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars at home, you know, for my loved,
mm-hmm,
one. And I say, why? And they say, well, we didn't do any planning. It was too late. We needed the care. I said, well, we could have moved all the assets out of that person's name. Well, I thought there was a look-back period. But
there's so much that we just don't know.
Just don't know.
It would be impossible to know to all of it.
It's
so
impossible for a lot of elder law attorneys to know all these things.
Right, right.
So never mind using a non-elder law attorney.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the situation where someone finds himself in the need of the last minute plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're at that point, Medicare has stopped their coverage. What is it, 100 days?
It could be 100 days. They could stop it sooner.
Okay.
So it's not guaranteed 100 days.
So we're at the point where Medicare stops, Medicaid kicks in.
Yes.
Have you been? Can you give some specific examples of how you, without using names, obviously, but families that you have been able to help, just to further prove that it's never too late.
It's never too
late to get yourself a good elder law attorney.
A couple of nursing, you know, a nursing home example. The first thing, as you know, is that we're always going to look to prepay a funeral.
Yes.
And there are some rules that they're not too recent anymore, but there were some recent changes in the statutes that allow for you to prepay funerals, not only for the applicant,
right,
but for the spouse, for the family members. And family members are pretty well defined.
It's a pretty broad base, because it even includes, and I've done this a few times, your child and your child's spouse.
That's right.
Can go into, so it's not the vertical.
It's not necessarily vertical. And so we've actually, now most families don't necessarily want to start paying for funerals for you know, children and things
Absolutely.
Like that. But there are instances where there might be a bunch of siblings,
mm-hmm,
and it's an easy way to move money. But that's the first thing we look. We look for exempt transfers, like I just mentioned. And then ultimately, if we've done all of our planning and utilized everything that we possibly can utilize. There's some fancy planning that we can do that can save about 40 to 50% of the assets, even at the last moment in time.
Really?
It's called a promissory note gifting strategy. It's a little bit too technical to talk about on the air, but there is a way to save about 40 to 50% of the assets. Keeping in mind also that there are certain assets that are just purely exempt. For instance, IRAs. IRAs are exempt assets. Okay. As long as you're taking your required minimum distribution, mm-hmm. Medicaid will not touch the principal balance of that IRA.
Okay.
And now there's all different kinds of nuances with that. But from a general perspective, you shouldn't have to cash out your IRA. Now, many people go into nursing facilities and the nursing home says, what are your assets? And the people say, I have $100,000 cash and I have $200,000 in an IRA. And the nursing home says, pay us. And they start writing out checks out of that IRA. And that's a taxable transaction, right? There could be an offsetting medical deduction, but it's a taxable transaction. And you do not need to deplete your IRA. So you've just unnecessarily depleted assets that could pass to the next generation.
You know, it's frightening to think in that moment you're so vulnerable and emotions run high and you're arguably scared and there's mm-hmm. so much happening. It's so important, and I hope listeners take away from this show today, to always have trusted advisors around you.
That's right.
To be in the presence of a trusted friend, or a family member, proper advisors, attorneys, accountants. You should not be in this decision-making process alone.
That's right. And I often joke around with people, Jen, and you probably have heard me say this. The first call is usually to the funeral director or to the doctor, and the next call is usually to the attorney. I can't tell you how many times people call me, and it's that immediate next call.
Yeah.
Not because I'm about to offer any kind of planning advice.
Right.
But because I'm part of that network of resources.
It's very true. People will leave me, and again, they do contact the attorney. And I always say, and I said this morning to a family that I was meeting with for pre-planning, in anything in life, there's such a different outcome when you have a plan in place, when you're proactive versus reacting mm-hmm. with anything in life. So the messages that you're sending out today should really resonate with that healthy 60-something-year-old, 50-something-year-old. You know, when you're at a point where... You know, obviously you're advancing in age, but you're not old by any means. You still have your health, your vitality. But that's the time to really start thinking of, what do I have in place? What would happen, God forbid? No one likes to think of the unlikely scenario.
That's right.
But it's too late to, not too late, but it's better to think about it before a crisis arises.
At that point, you're in complete control.
That's very true, being in complete control. So... what are some things you shouldn't do when someone needs nursing home care or home care?
The very first thing that you should not do is listen to other people.
Right? Well, so that's like lessons to live by.
That's lessons to live by. But you should not take the advice of people that are not professionals and start spending down your assets. Like I said before, the IRA, I think, is a great example.
Absolutely. What about Social Security, Sal? Does that fall under the umbrella of what...
Well, Social Security is income.
Right.
And so there's a distinction between assets and income.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into a nursing home, your income may have to go to the nursing home. If there's a spouse in the community, the spouse is allowed a certain allowance.
Okay.
And we would have to look at her income, and then we look at your income, and we have to, you know, do a little bit of a budget calculation. But if you're single and going to a nursing home, generally speaking, with the exception of a few offsetting deductions, your income is going to go to the nursing home.
Okay.
But that's okay. That's a small price to pay. You know, if you're contributing your income to the cost of a nursing home and Medicaid's paying the rest,
it's not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal.
Now, you know, you raised the issue of the ill spouse and the well spouse, but that should also trigger the next step when the ill spouse should pass and then the well spouse eventually becomes
right.
the ill spouse and there are children, because those transfers are not so readily done. I mean, that's usually when the issue comes
that's
in.
That's right. So, you know, it's a great segue into what needs to happen next. But, you know, when we move assets to a well spouse, and this is really, you know, a telltale sign as to whether you're really working with an elder law attorney or
mm-hmm.
not. One of the first things we do after we move the assets from the ill spouse to the well spouse is we redo the estate plan of the well spouse. So typical wills for husband and wife are what we call I love you wills. And these are the types of wills that everybody prints, you know, off the internet or at LegalZoom.com or wherever they want to go and get these wills drafted. And they usually leave everything to each other. But if you don't change that will and the well spouse dies first, all the assets are going to pass right back to the ill spouse.
Absolutely.
So the first thing we do is we redo the well spouse's estate plan. After we find, after we obtain Medicaid eligibility for the person in the nursing home, there's then an opportunity to go back to the well spouse and do the planning that should have been done a long time ago. In essence, we're going to try to take a shot at the five-year look-back period by doing pre-planning with the well spouse. And so that's all part of phase two. And what's become more and more common today, Jen, is we're seeing a lot of families, whether middle-aged or young, leave assets in trust for,
right,
for their children.
Right.
The typical will that you would see would set up a trust for people under a certain age. It might be 25, it might be 30, it might be 35. And once those beneficiaries reach that age, the assets pass to those beneficiaries outright. What's become more and more common is that people are leaving assets in lifetime trust, where the beneficiary has some control over the trust, can access the trust,
right,
for limited purposes. So it's not like the money's being kept away. But these are good asset protection trust.
And again, it's all about preservation and preservation of wealth and assets. How important is it to, even if you have these plans in place, to review these documents? Would you say every 5 years? Would you say yearly past a certain age?
I'm a little bit different than most attorneys. I don't try to define a period,
okay,
that you always have to look at it. I tell people anytime there's a change, an event that changes your life, so mm-hmm, a birth, a death, a divorce, an illness.
Very true.
Right? And then you're always free within, a reasonable period of time after drafting to contact us and have another look at it.
Absolutely.
Right?
And then even to have your check marks in place, people out there might be listening and what you're saying I'm sure is resonating. To have the power of attorneys looked at, to have the documents looked at, to do some administrative housekeeping, it's important to check off first, do you have these documents? And
right,
if so, when were they drafted? What, if anything, needs to be amended?
Very much so. And in my practice, as I said earlier when we started the show, I'm an accountant as well, and I do a lot of tax returns.
Okay.
And what happens in my practice is that a lot of my legal clients become tax clients, not necessarily because they want me to do their tax return because I'm the greatest accountant, but because they get a chance to talk to me once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they come in every year and they, maybe nothing changed,
right,
but now you have an opportunity to see your attorney once a year and say hello. And in that, it could be a year, it could be 2 years, it could be 3 years. In that one given year, something changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right there in front of you and I'm giving you an opportunity to talk and we can review your documents.
So important. You're out on the lecture circuit quite frequently. You do many events and you're very passionate about the causes that you spoke about today. What do you pick up from your audience of the biggest recurring theme or problem? I mean, if you can make one blanket statement to address a recurring issue, what would you say?
I think the biggest recurring issue that we see often are individuals who don't necessarily think that they're going to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't put the focus where it needs to be at an early stage. Taking the advice of non-elder law attorneys or non-attorneys, non-attorneys, period.
Right.
There's a lot of individuals out there that are giving out advice that shouldn't be giving out advice.
And it could be, there's a costly price tag to bad advice in this field.
Very much so. I had somebody email me this week, wanted to inquire about my services. I told them exactly what I can and can't do and how much it would cost. And he found an Arizona trust company willing to prepare the Medicaid type trust that we do for our clients on a regular basis.
Wow.
For a fraction of the cost. But just think about what I just said.
Well, you get what you pay for in life. And I think that a lot of things come down to that. I mean,
right,
there is always a way to do it cheaper, but look at the source of where it's coming from.
That's right.
There's no background in this. There's no, and especially in out of state. I mean, the need to be in state is so important. I mean,
so much so. And I urge people not to look at this as a commodity, right? It's about the relationship.
Right.
So you come in, you talk to us. If you like us, you work with us. If you don't like us, move on. But go to
take the knowledge with you.
Right. Take the knowledge and go on to the next elder law attorney.
So, Sal, in order for someone to get to like you, they have to meet you. How do they find you?
So they can call the office, 914-925-1010. Melanie is our paralegal. She answers the phone. You can find us on the internet, plan today for tomorrow. That's spelled out. That's all. That's one big word spelled out, plan today for tomorrow. You can
and
email
your Yorktown number, what was that? That was the RIE number?
Yeah, 914-245-2440 is the Yorktown office, but they all go to Melanie.
No, okay, they all go to the same place. Okay. And your website, you're on Facebook as well, but you have a website that's plantodayfortomorrow.com. And we encourage people to email you or contact you for questions.
Yes.
I'm sure you meet with people regularly for consultations.
Yes.
And then if it goes further from there, that's great. But again, it is important to pause and reflect on this, because it's great when you're fine and when you're healthy, but things can change on a dime at any given age.
At any age.
Are you seeing more of an even younger start now to people looking at this, 40s? And
I do, but the truth of the matter is that young people just don't have the resources at times to devote to their planning.
Right.
And between soccer and football and baseball and everything else that a young family has to worry about, it's usually put on the back burner. 7 out of 10 times, you'll probably get out unscathed. But there are instances in my office where there are young families that unfortunately have suffered, tragedies.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, if you don't do your planning at a young age, not having the right documents is real burdensome.
Well, again, we hope that the message that resonates out there is to plan today for tomorrow, your brand, so easy to remember, and also that people take the time to speak to an elder law attorney on matters of asset preservation and protection and matters of Medicaid. This is complicated stuff, folks, so speak to an expert. Sal DiCostanza, maker Fragale and DiCostanza, thank you so much for joining us. You can be reached at
914-925-1010.
And this is Jen Graziano thanking you for taking the time to listen as we took the time to talk. Have a great day, Westchester. Bye-bye.